Your relationship with Cuba, it dates back a few decades.
Actually, it has been quite some time. My first visit to Cuba was in 1999 with Governor George Ryan when he went down there on that historic trip to be the first sitting governor in the United States to visit since the revolution of 1959.
And at that time, what was that trip all about?
If one reflects back, we were during the Clinton administration in the White House. So it was a time when many of us, and I happen to be one of these, that believed then and today that it is much better to have engagements with countries on food, medicine, and educational materials for trade as opposed to just having a complete blockade. And for two reasons. One, it helps the American business, agriculture in particular, and others to sell product. But the other thing is, it also then removes the, let me call it the propaganda that Cuba and other countries for embargoes could say, you know, you're helping to starve our children, you're not getting us medicine. So I believed in that, and Governor Ryan did as well, and put together a delegation of business leaders and some elected officials, asked me, because I was in international business in the private sector at the time, and we went there for a three-day visit to engage with the ministries of healthcare and agriculture and ultimately the executive branch to talk about what we can do to help normalize relations between our two countries and eventually sell more Illinois product there.
And did it work?
You know, it did to some extent. And let me break it into two pieces. One piece is a humanitarian, cultural type of exchange, and the other was in actual factual commerce. And, you know, I know our agriculture community, particularly here in the Midwest, was very supportive of it. Some of the larger companies that had capacity at that time to do some international trade eventually did sell some grain to Cuba. I know when the first cargo barge, I think would be the right word for it, the barge went down towards Cuba, that was a big deal. And that came from Illinois, and I think that helped kind of get things moving on some of the agriculture. It didn't turn out over the years to be as much as we wanted, because eventually White Houses changed and so did policy. The second thing that I would note is on the cultural type of exchange, the young people. And 2 years after 1999, in 2001, in fact, some local luminaries there in the McLean County area, Bob and Julie Dobsky, were the sponsors to help take a group of softball players to Cuba, you know, under their local, at that time, their franchise of McDonald's. And organizers asked me to join them, and I did. I said, I'll pay my own way, of course, but went down. And so here you had these young people from central Illinois playing softball for two or three or four days, boys and girls, with the Cuban boys and girls. So those kind of things and relations, I'm positive, are helpful, because I haven't seen or talked to any of the kids that were with us back then, but, you know, now we're so many years later, and they're young adults. They have to have a better appreciation of what international relations are about, and hopefully to help bring about a better stability in countries between the U.S. and Cuba and others around the world.
Under President Obama, there was a normalizing of relations to an extent, and really it was with a longer view of easing restrictions and opening up trade. And I can recall that Donald Trump, just a year ago, talked about how he would love to set up some Trump hotels in Cuba, and he seemed very supportive of the Obama administration's direction. But then, now as president, he really changed direction. And I understand you were actually in Cuba when that announcement came out.
Yes, I was. In fact, a step before that, when President Obama announced removing Cuba from the state-sanctioned terrorist list, I was in Cuba then. It happened at the same day, and of course was able to talk with the Cubans, and it's like, you know, terrorism and sponsored, state-sponsored and all of that stuff hasn't been going on for decades in that country. And then, yes, last Friday I was in Havana the day that President Trump announced. But I think, Colleen, in a couple of points, what President Obama did was he couldn't lift the embargo. That was put into place by the United States Congress. So as president, he couldn't lift it. He needed and could only do things by executive order, and he allowed it to be for individuals to travel to Cuba, still under the travel regulations of the U.S. Department of Treasury. But it was a self-declaration that the individuals would make. He also provided for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, U.S. Department of Commerce, and some from the Homeland Security area to engage the Cuban government on what we can do to help normalize and help with regards to trade, but also with regards to pharmaceuticals. And Cuba has been dramatically advanced in areas with regards to lung cancer medicine and diabetes. They've had a phenomenal biotech operation going there. So we started to, under the Obama administration, started to engage and what can they import, what can, you know, export and so forth. Well, then candidate Trump had talked about Cuba and obviously from his private enterprises and casinos, hotels and restaurants and so forth. Well, then the time came for the election and candidate Trump had made it pretty clear when he was in Miami in the little Havana area that, you know, he was going to get hard on the policies of Obama, and that rallied up the Cuban Americans that have, you know, some very displeasurable thoughts towards the regime in Cuba, which I understand, but it came to the election. He didn't carry Miami, but he didn't lose it as much, and many accredit his carrying the Florida Electoral College because of the Cuban-American vote. So now we come to June of 2017, and he goes to Cuba with Senator Marco Rubio and others to say, okay, I am going to change the Obama relationship with Cuba. So it was a good rhetorical, political type of comment. In reality, we still have the embassy there. We still have Americans allowed to travel to Cuba, not individuals by themselves. You need to, you know, be a part of a sanctioned group to go down there, and that's what our travel club does, and we were doing it before Obama changes. And then has also stopped some of the commerce that was going on with Cuba. And Colleen, because the administration still has about, you know, 90 days to write the regulations to implement the president's directive, we'll still need to have about 3 months to ferret out exactly the harm or benefit to the whole thing. And if nothing else, what I personally happen to believe is the negative is that it has put a wet towel over the feeling from American agriculture, American business, that we're going to be able to progressively move to a better relationship with Cuba in the near future.
You're listening to Sound Ideas, and I'm Colleen Reynolds, talking with former state senator and treasurer and now owner of Global Relations Travel Club, Dan Rutherford. And so now companies that were interested in investing and developing new markets are reacting by not investing?
Yeah, fair enough. And the two things you said, one is investing and then one is about the market. From the investing standpoint, and in fact, Starwood's Hotels, which was bought out by Marriott, they had received approval from the United States Department of Treasury during the Obama administration for changes in Cuba, and they have made investments into hotels and then to manage some Cuban hotels. What's happened, though, since the Trump announcement is that they have, those that they had in place will be grandfathered in, which means that they were already operating under a license that the U.S. Department of Treasury will let them continue, but they cannot then go into a new one, meaning a new license. But what that did, though, is it basically said to Starwood and Marriott, and I'm not tied with them in any way, is they're not looking to, you know, even maybe continue with what they've got because they don't know where this administration is going to go in the future. From the standpoint of the trade, separate from investment, it's become concerning because even our American agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture secretary didn't seem to be pleased about the announcement. And obviously, I think that our local county and our local state farm bureau and farm unions associations have not been happy with it because it once again puts that wet, damp blanket over what could be a relatively lucrative trade opportunity with an island that's only 90 miles away. And, you know, put it in perspective, Cuba's small. Cuba's population is about the size of Illinois, but the economy is dramatically small. So it's not a big market, but the point of it is it's like our neighbor market. The largest trade partner for the United States is Canada. Well, it's because it's right there. And if you have yourself a country such as Cuba, they import 80% of their chicken from Mexico. I mean, you know, and in Latin America, chicken is a highly consumed protein. So, you know, the amount of chicken that we can produce in the United States and take it down the St. Lawrence and put it into Cuba makes it an elementary market for us to work with. But our government has precluded us from taking advantage of that.
It's interesting, too, that today you read the polls and even most Cuban Americans are not in favor of these kinds of sanctions.
You're right. And the statistic on the Cuban American, it's interesting to see the cross tabs on that, in that the older Cuban Americans, that absolutely, it was terrible. You know, what they had to suffer through back in the 1950s and the early 60s, and eventually the nationalization of their property. I am totally about making reparations on all of that. I mean, I understand it. But how you get to that point is you got to move on to have dialogue. And the younger Cuban Americans are the ones that skew that percentage, saying, let's engage, let's get this going. The American public is behind it as well. So it's definitely a political situation. And here, let me just say this. Part of our ideology is to be able to be independent and do what we want, obviously within the confines of a proper society. There is only one country on this planet that United States citizens, because of their government, is precluded from traveling. Our government does not preclude us from going to Russia. Our government does not preclude us from going to Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, or Pakistan. But our United States government precludes us, without a license and without proper process, to go to Cuba. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, let me ask you, too, don't we have an example of capitalism working to foster democracy as we look at what happened with the Soviet Union?
Ask Mikhail Gorbachev. Absolutely, Colleen. And I'm not a student of it. I mean, I was around and observant, but I'm not an economic student of it. But you look at what happened with the Soviet Union and their lack of economic stimulus and Americans, you know, prodding and pursuing. Well, now it's no longer the Soviet Union. It's broken into the various states. And I think to bring it back to the conversation of Cuba, Colleen, we see it going on now. There's what's called paladars, which means that they are privately run restaurants, privately run out of people's homes. You've got people that own their own 1950s car that are now renting them out for taxis, private, personal, not the government. I've gotten into a 1950s Chevy, and it was driven by a physician, a doctor. She, female, made more money driving her family's old car as a taxi than she did as a physician. You've got examples in Cuba of Casa Particular, which are, in essence, a bed and breakfast. The government of Cuba, not that long ago, actually, allowed people to take a room in their home and make it into a B&B, in part because they didn't have enough capacity for hotels for the Europeans and Canadians coming, but also because it allowed them to make some extra money. So there's an example of capitalism, free market, working in the country of Cuba. And I'm concerned because the restrictions that this president, Trump, has put on will cause less traffic to the private restaurants, the private casas, and to the private taxis than if he'd have left it alone.
So ultimately, you say this policy will likely do more to harm the spread of capitalism, which is, to some extent, on a small scale, operating and helping improve the lives of people in Cuba.
Absolutely. I totally believe it. Now, here, I don't want to have us Americans get too big in our boots. There are, I'll be off by 100,000, but there's 1.3 million Europeans that visit Cuba. They're not precluded from it. There's 1.1 million Canadians that visit Cuba. They're not precluded from it. There's a few hundred thousand, because of the expansion opportunity that the President Obama provided, to visit Cuba. We are a small percentage, but the difference is we are the growing opportunity, and candidly, so many times from the Cuban people, they prefer the Americans because we're good tippers. You know, they're willing to do things. The Canadians generally go to an all-inclusive resort in Varadero for 10 days or 2 weeks, and they won't even leave. They won't even get into the Cuban environment. They'll sit there at the all-day buffet and the open drinks by the pool, swim, you know, get another drink and eat some more buffet. Where we Americans, we go to Hemingway's home. The Americans will go see Pilar, the boat from Old Man and the Sea. We'll go to the Revolution Museum, even though the history, according to Cuba, is different than ours. You know, we as Americans will go into and dive into and engage the Cuban society and people where the others generally don't.
So where do you see this ultimately heading? Do you think that the power of companies like ADM and Cargill and many, many others will have the kind of influence to maybe make the president rethink this change?
My gut tells me no, and it isn't because they don't have clout. because, you know, Monsanto's and all of those you mentioned, and deservedly so, they're big. But the Cuban market is, in light of the multi-billion multinationals, is a small market. It's like, how much energy and clout do I need to expend to get to a market of 12 million people? You know, it's like going to Illinois. You know, now that the president has made his proclamation, it's almost impossible to pull him back. So I think what will happen is, for the next 90 days, to try to influence the regulations, the rules that will be promulgated by Department of Ag, Commerce, Treasury, and so forth, I think that's where the last attempt to make an influence on the future of this administration will come. Once that's done, I think it's done. Unless, and I don't see it happen because I don't see the president signing it into law, unless Congress gets the will and the votes to remove the Cuban embargo. It's a piece of legislation. The president of the United States then has to decide if he's going to sign it or veto it. And every indication, obviously, that we've seen in the last 5 days, he would veto it.
Well, former state senator Dan Rutherford, former state treasurer as well, you are now operating Global Relations Travel Club, and you are continuing to do trips to Cuba, so if anyone's interested, they can contact you.
Yeah, in fact, I was just down there last week. We're going to take off for the summer of July and August. It's hot there, but we're going back in September, October, two trips in November.
So for you, this new approach by the Trump administration means just a little more paperwork?
Yeah, we're going to have to see some of the places we go to. The U.S. State Department is going to issue a list of some of the restaurants you can't go to because it's invested in by the Cuban military. And I'm like, okay. In fact, we've been doing that as much as possible, go to private enterprises every place we can, just because I happen to believe in that. But the other thing that it'll cause us to do is go back to the same extra paperwork that we were doing before President Obama announced his changes, which I came from government, so I understand how the paper pushers work.
Well, Dan Rutherford, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Colleen.